K540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The winds of Hurricane Idalia brought down trees and power lines. Around 380,000 customers are without power in three southeastern states, according to PowerOutage.us. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
There is, of course, a lot of debris to clean up, but we will get working with that with the local communities to make sure that the roads are cleared and people can go back to their lives.
CBS's Omar Villafranca in Crystal River, Florida.
As the water level goes down, we're still seeing rescue vehicles speeding around, taking people to higher ground. There are shelters set up for people who don't have a place to stay, but residents tell me it's going to take months to clean up all this mess.
Idalia made landfall today along Florida's Big Bend region and is now a tropical storm in South Carolina. President Biden says he'll reach out to Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell after the Kentucky lawmaker appeared to freeze on camera for the second time this summer. CBS's Allison Keyes.
The 81-year-old senator was asked if he planned to run for re-election in 2026. McConnell asked the reporter to repeat the question, then trailed off. An aide stepped in.
Did you hear the question, Senator? Running for re-election in 2026?
When he remained silent, the aide said,
"All right, I'm sorry, you all. We're going to need a minute."
CBS's Scott McFarlane explains why former Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani has to pay money to two poll workers in Georgia.
A D.C. federal judge has issued a default judgment in favor of two Georgia election workers, Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss, in their defamation case against former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, then a Trump legal advisor, for baseless claims made after the 2020 election in Georgia. The judge says there'll be a trial to determine how much financial damages Giuliani will have to pay.
$30 million in grants will go to Indiana schools to pay for school resource officers, training, and equipment. Indiana Department of Homeland Security Director Rusty Goodpaster.
Indiana is committed to the safety of their students and their schools and have increased the funding over the years. And with the new items that we made eligible, it expanded what the schools could ask for so that we actually got about 40 new schools applied this year due to that process.
British health regulators approve an immunotherapy drug that shortens cancer treatment times. Our Vicky Barker in London.
Atezolizumab helps the patient's own immune system seek and destroy cancerous cells. It takes 7 minutes to administer, compared to the 30 to 60 minutes most chemotherapy treatments take.
In Canada, near Toronto today, bee crates fell off of a truck and 5 million of them buzzed around the Burlington area. Drivers were told to close their windows and pedestrians told to stay away. Some beekeepers showed up to help out. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
A new head coach.
We got one objective, one goal, is to play for a championship.
A talented backfield.
Braylon Allen does it again.
And a defense that just...
Down he goes.
Won't...
Intercepted. He's gone.
Stop.
Another turnover forced.
Join us Saturday, September 2nd. It's the Badgers and Buffalo Bulls in Madison. Our coverage begins at 12:30 on your home for Wisconsin football.
WRJN 1400 AM, 99.9 FM Racine, and 98.1 FM.
Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. K540. Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999. And again, 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, Henry Cutter gave him.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Haley, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
You're absolutely right, Digga. This portion of the show is supported by NACDI's Four Sisters Farmers Market, which happens every Thursday on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis from 11 to 3.
You know, I'll be there tomorrow, too, in between on my little lunch break, getting that fry bread pizza. Hey, I was at the Brandi Carlile concert last night, 10th row, and I missed a pick by, like, about... well, three rows, but it was close. And it was just a great spiritual experience. What a great performer. And just a shout out to Brandi Carlile. Hey, we got a jam-packed show, and we have the executive director of Merge Wisconsin, Arvina Martin. Right now, it's all Ho-Chunk here on Native Roots Radio, and we like it that way. Ho-wah. Welcome.
Ho-wah.
Wong-Shik Wednesday.
Yes, exactly. So how are you? It seems like I haven't talked to you in a while. We're, you know, kind of spaced out here at the Minnesota get together, and Haley calls it the Minnesota Great Sweat Together, and we have our booth, yep. Native Roots Trading Post, out at the fair. So I've been visiting my Weeha and Hinu and telling them to get off their phone and start selling stuff. Ho!
That sounds like a pretty good, you know, pretty good way to be.
Exactly. Well, what's happening in a mad city? My second favorite city in the country, literally.
Things are going great. We actually had a lovely day today. It was sunny and didn't get higher than 72 degrees, which is exciting for us because our air conditioning doesn't work at our house right now. So it's nice to have some cool weather, you know, before we get our before the repair guys can come in and take care of everything for us. So
yeah, that's crazy. Well, that is good. And I know here in the Twin Cities by the weekend, we're going to be in the hundreds. And to me, there's no difference between 1,000,000 degrees and 100 degrees.
And I was planning, before I knew what the weather was going to be like, to go to Black River Falls for our Labor Day powwow. And now I'm like, maybe that's not a great idea for you, Arvina. Yeah. You don't do well in heat.
I know. No one does. Hey, I was at, watched the parade at the fairgrounds, and the St. Paul Roller Derby was in the fair, the Roller Girls. And that was really exciting. And I thought of you and all the great things that you do and for the community. You know, for me, the state fair at Minnesota has always been It's back to school. As a former teacher, it's back to school. Right after Labor Day, we get the students. But it's also like political time. And, you know, we got school boards and things like that and lions and tigers and bears coming up. What's going on in the great state of Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah. So we have a rare stretch of time without any elections. We don't have any fall elections this year. So our next set of elections will be spring of 2024. And yeah, that includes school boards. And, you know, the right wing is really pushing candidates and pushing for people that think like them and are the kinds of folks that want to tell, you know, students that slaves learned valuable skills that help them in their lives and, you know, and other non-truths, et cetera. And so, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the idea that we need more Native people on school boards. Just up and down, wherever you are in Wisconsin, in Minnesota, you know, we don't have enough Native people that are on school boards that can help, you know, protect curriculum to be, you know, authentic and educational and real, I guess. I mean, we're to the point where you know, they're trying, the other side is trying to put in like actual lies about things and change things because they're afraid it's going to make somebody feel bad instead of understanding that, you know, you can love your country and still be critical of it. And that's okay. It's okay to be critical of events in the past because that's how you get better. And, you know, I think that when it comes to, you know, both educating Native students in a safe and respectful environment, as well as educating non-Native students about Native people, again, in a safe and a respectful environment, is really important. And I think that we need to have more Native people on school boards because we're able to kind of bring voice to those concerns and those are things that are on our minds and they're not, you know, they won't get swept under the rug if we have people championing those things. And, you know, I think about how every year we hear about students that are banned from having either beadwork on their graduation cap or having an eagle feather on their graduation cap and how ridiculous that is and right. How that could be helped by having someone of that student's background, having a Native person in a position of power and that has a platform to speak and that people will listen to. I think it's really, really important, especially when kids, you know, have to tell somebody at their school that, you know, their team played somebody with a Native mascot and all of their schoolmates, even if it's not their school, you know, that has the mascot, they go to these games and have to see all kinds of horrible things. You know, people saying scalp the Indians or, you know, just
tomahawk chop.
Tomahawk chops, just really offensive visual images, you know, just things that are antithetical to an educational experience, you know, for anybody.
Well, you know, what's weird or not weird. What's really cool. We need to stay vigilant here in Minnesota, but this year, Haley, help me out. There's a new law that Native American history is, it's a law in Minnesota where they have to teach Native American history.
Yeah. So the legislator just kind of snuck this into like a wording of the bill, one of the bills that was passed. So yeah, it's now a requirement that K-12 teachers have to teach Indigenous history in the classroom.
That's I mean, that's a great first step. We have something similar in Wisconsin. It's referred to as Act 31. But unfortunately, there's no like enforcement mechanism or there's no teeth to it. So, you know, if people don't teach about it, nothing happens. So in a lot of cases, there are so many schools in Wisconsin that don't do this because nothing's going to happen to them if they don't. And I hope that Minnesota has some better enforcement mechanisms involved in their in your law over there than we have over here. So
what a great point. And that's what I mean. We have to stay vigilant and not relax because politicians change, governors change, and we still have to do what you do and how you work with women and with Emerge Wisconsin. And maybe we can talk a little bit more about what's happening with Emerge Wisconsin and how people Absolutely. Can get a hold of you and just that's rock the vote. That's get going here, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Hey, we're here with Arvina Ho-Chunk. Hey, we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm woke. Whoa. Hey.
Stay with us.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions,
when we relearn our values,
when we live our teachings,
respecting our elders,
cherishing and honoring our children,
when we honor and take care of our spirit,
there will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Attention art enthusiasts, experience Laura Youngbird's indie Wisigindum, My Heart Hurts, a solo exhibition by Laura Youngbird presented by All My Relations Arts this summer. All My Relations Arts aims to foster connections between contemporary American Indian artists, preceding generations, diverse audiences, and the vitality of the American Indian cultural corridor. Laura Youngbird is a talented artist from the Minnesota Chippewa Grand Portage Band that uses the dress as a metaphor to address social issues, injustices, and biases. Through mixed media combining drawing, painting, and prints, Laura explores the dress as a powerful symbol in her work, revealing layers of meaning. Her series examines mixed emotions and themes like common threads, loose ends, and vulnerability. And you can see Laura Youngbird's Inde Wisigindum, My Heart Hurts, all summer through September 9th at All My Relations Arts in Minneapolis. Plan your visit and let the moving art speak to your heart. More information at allmyrelationsarts.org.
Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical prescription drugs and dental, plus over 30 extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we're here with Arvina Martin, CEO or Executive Director of Emerge Wisconsin, and I'll have to get schooled after the show by Haley. What's the difference between CEO and Executive Director? So, hey, we're here and we're talking politics and we're talking school board a little bit. And, you know, that's one thing I think the other side is really kind of concentrating on, too, because we hear these wacky school board meetings of people that don't have children in the school, don't live in the area, and it's sounding like they're all upset and they're just in there flaming the fire. Arvina, you're on mute.
Every time I start talking, I'm just excited to say things and I'm always muted every time. What I was trying to say or was starting to say is that the right wing has actively recruited all of those people, and the left and the progressives are starting to do the same and actively recruiting candidates for local offices in particular. We kind of refer to that as building the bench, so that, you know, the folks that are that are starting in local offices, maybe they ultimately want to run for a state office or a federal office too, and they're kind of getting experience, you know, serving on a legislative body at a more local level. And we on the left need to make sure that we're doing that as well. The problem is that, you know, a lot of people that make up the left, you know, especially for BIPOC, people of color, for women, that, you know, we might not see ourselves as qualified in the same way that somebody from the right is convinced that they're qualified. And it's a really difficult hurdle to jump over. And I just want to say to anybody who's considering running, for any Native person who is considering running for office, you are qualified. You are qualified. You are qualified. You have experiences that very likely other people that serve on whatever body you're looking to run for, that they don't have. And those experiences are going to widen the view of that particular body, and you're going to be able to make much better legislation that helps more people with less effort. And that's always something that is positive. And going back to school boards, you know, you were a student, you've been to school, you know how that works. Maybe you're a parent. That's another outstanding point of view and frame of reference that you can bring to serving on a school board. But, you know, if you've been to school, you know, you've got, or if you've been educated, which I, you know, assume most are, you know, you have that experience as a student, and, you know, you can see how things are different from when you were there, where we're in school, either positive or negative, and can take a look at some of the issues that are facing our students these days.
You know, Arvina, and you're an former elected official, and you know, I've been to the Capitol here. Well, I've been to both capitals, Madison and St. Paul here, and they're people. They listen to you, and I think that's a thing that we have, that, you know, Emerge and you talking about Emerge and running for office really demystifies it. If you go to the Capitol and talk to these people, they're just people. They put their shoes on one shoe at a time.
Exactly. I think that for the longest time we've held elected officials, no matter what their level of services, to such a high standard, or we think of them as occupying this very high up space, when really they're just regular people that, you know, want to watch the Packer game on Sunday. Sorry for my Minnesota fans here, but I had to throw that in, you know, and want to make sure that, you know, kids are growing up in a safe and healthy environment. And, you know, when you start meeting those folks, it starts, the whole barrier seems to break down, and it is a lot easier to see the people that are making the decisions for us, that they are just regular people, just like us, you know, and that there isn't some kind of special candidate tree that they fell off of, or somebody picked out and was like, oh, this one's ready to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, first school board, then city council, then state representative, then state senator, then president. Isn't that how it used to go? Something like that.
You know, something like that. And you know, a lot of these local races or local positions they're not full time, so you don't have to give up your job. You know, you can keep going about your regular life. You just have you know, a little less free time because you've got meetings to go to in some evenings and emails to answer from constituents.
Well, that's talk about the, you know, and I always like to talk about call to action. That's get your website, get the information out there. You know, every time we see each other, I want to blast that out there and tell people what's up.
Yes. Emerge Wisconsin. You can check us out, wi.emergeamerica.org, and pay attention because on Monday, September 4th, aka Labor Day, we are going to be opening up our applications. So for any women or any non-binary folks that feel comfortable in female-centered spaces, please go on Monday or after to apply to our program. You can also reach me at Arvina, A-R-V-I-N-A, at emergewi.org. If you have any questions about running for office just generally, or, you know, maybe you are listening from outside of Wisconsin, and I'd be happy to help you figure out and find resources in the state where you live to be able to, you know, get you started on a journey to public service. So we are here to help you.
That's exciting. And when you say help too, it's if somebody feels uncomfortable in the beginning, I mean, Emerge and yourself personally will help people get through things in the beginning because it's overwhelming. I mean, you know, my job, it's taken me 2 years to figure out what's going on. And you know what? I still don't know what's going on.
Well, and that's the great thing about participating in a program like Emerge is that we have hundreds of alums that are excited for you and want to help you out. And maybe they've gone through something similar and they can help you kind of work your way through some of the things that are more difficult. Maybe you have, you know, you get nervous when public speaking and somebody can help you and listen to you while you practice. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just a whole kind of camaraderie that comes with this, a program like Emerge. And, you know, that is a huge help, you know, and without all of the other trainings and the nuts and bolts that you learn, having someone who can relate to you and you can either vent to or, you know, talk to during your whole electoral process. I mean, that's a really important thing because running for office is weird. And if you haven't done it, so, like it's hard to kind of understand how weird it is and how to be on all the time and have to, you know, have to be able to pull certain talking points out of your head at the drop of a hat and talking, having conversations all day, but still feeling alone because, you know, you're talking to constituents and not people that know you well. Like it's something that you really need to have someone who's been through it to kind of help you process your own feelings about it. I think it's so helpful.
Hey, did you ever hear the story of me meeting Obama here in Milwaukee this past year?
I did not.
I had a few things to tell him, you know, what's up? Hey, free Leonard Peltier, tell your buddy Biden, you know, and I had all these things. And we were in front of the line to get our picture taken with him. And then he reached out his hand and he said, "Hi, how are you doing?" and smiled at me. I wanted to hug him and kiss him. And then 13 seconds later, I got a picture taken and I was gone.
Yeah, absolutely. Those photo lines go really quick. And when I met President Biden last spring and I introduced him, told him, "I'm Ho-Chunk and welcome to our ancestral homeland." He got, his eyes got big and he kind of put his hands up in the air and he goes, "I love it when Native people remind all of us that they're citizens and of other nations." And he gave me the biggest hug and I just was like, whoa, like, okay. That's not how, I don't know how I expected this to go, but that certainly wasn't it.
Well, I was going to tell him what's up. Hey, talk to Biden. And next thing you know, 13 seconds later, I wanted to hug and kiss him. And I shook his hand, got a picture, and it was gone.
Absolutely. It's, I mean, even the coolest of the cool kind of lose it when you meet the president, you know, it's
or the former president, right?
Yep.
Yep, Obama to us was a rock star here. It was like amazing. Well, Arvina, it's time to say see you later. I really appreciate you stopping in. Appreciate your energy and all you do for us as a Ho-Chunk, but as a representative Ho-Chunk person in Wisconsin and across Turtle Island, you're dynamite and emerge.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Idalia made landfall in Florida's Big Bend area as a Category 3 hurricane. This woman is in Perry, where they face quite a bit of cleanup.
We've already started to come together. Everybody's checking on everybody. We've got a great community here, so I think we're all just going to help each other out, however long it does take.
Tropical storm Idalia is now in South Carolina. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell was asked a question today, said a few words, and then froze. It's the second time it has happened in front of reporters. His office said he became lightheaded and will get checked out by a doctor. Independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont saying,
Senator McConnell and I disagree on everything, but I certainly wish him the best and you know, hope he makes a full recovery.
CBS's Vicky Barker has more on an immunotherapy drug approved in Britain that shortens cancer treatment times.
Atezolizumab helps the patient's own immune system seek and destroy cancerous cells. It's being offered to patients with lung, breast, liver, and bladder cancer.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Experience the magic. Joy Engine presents Nightlight, Friday and Saturday, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. The dazzling live spectacle brings 4D projection mapping technology to Milwaukee's iconic historic Mitchell neighborhood. A multi-story building at 710 West Historic Mitchell Street will serve as the mesmerizing backdrop for the show. Nightlight will feature a fashion show, a variety of local vendors, dance performances, and music. After sundown, the event will set the grounds alight with an amazing motion graphic show. Families with children will have plenty of options to indulge in memory-making activities throughout the festival's run, including a life-size light bright wall and a hands-on multilingual exhibit presented by PNC Bank. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event, Nightlight, presented by Joy Engine, where art comes to life. Log on joyengine.org. That's joyengine.org.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Wisconsin's manner of funding local government is nearly singular in the country. That cheese stands alone, if you will. It hasn't been working in Milwaukee. It hasn't been working in Rhinelander. It hasn't been working in La Crosse, Green Bay, Madison, Kenosha, Racine. I don't care what you pick. It ain't working.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
With a low of 60, then Wednesday sunshine with a high of 78.
Warner Stallion delivers appliance savings on a stick you won't find anywhere else. Earn a bonus for each additional appliance you buy for up to $1,000 back. Plus, pay no interest for 2 years. Shop smart with the specialists at Warner Stellion.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Hey, that was awesome. Wendy's here, too, off camera, and we are here with Dr. Maureen Hackett, founder of Howling for Wolves, and always great to see you, you know, and great for all the work you do.
Boo-hoo, Wakunjahade. Yeah. Did I get your name right?
Yeah, you spoke a little Ojibwe, too, and threw out some Ho-Chunk in there. That's awesome. Welcome. Really good to see you. What's happening? We got some updates coming up here. And Wendy's
I thought I'd have a slow summer. Oh. I thought we would have a slow summer. I'm doing the Trump thing. Anyway, but instead, it's been quite busy. Let's see. What would I like to say? First of all, a big publication came out in early June that showed us what we thought was really happening, and that is that with wolf hunts comes more illegal wolf killing. Mm. And so this was a study that analyzed the Minnesota DNR's own data, 16 years of collared wolf data, that basically found human-caused wolf mortality more than tripled with the hunts and continued for 5 years after the hunts ended till the end of the data. This is in Minnesota. This is Minnesota's own data. The author is a geneticist, actually, and a computational biologist. Let's see if we can. And it was published in Nature Scientific Reports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have a link to this. Everybody has access. At Howling for Wolves, if you look at our press latest news, it's on the front page, the July 10th release will tell you all about this. So I used this in a meeting with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources on August 17th when they had a finalization of the wolf plan. And I requested that they reevaluate the wolf plan in light of this data. And really the study in 2023 of the wolves killed outside of national parks and how it disrupts their packs. So I've been busy trying to figure out a way to get wolf hunting both out of the wolf plan in Minnesota and also continue the push to have wolf hunting prohibited in the state of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So I will let you jump in because we have more even from there. So go ahead.
Well, Wendy, go ahead.
Yeah, well, first, Maureen, hi. Thank you so much, Dr. Hackett, for being here. We always appreciate your expertise about our Minnesota wolves, which we are always working on saving at, every day. A friend of mine inboxed me privately on Facebook. I don't know if you know anything about this at all, but her daughter's best friend lives in Duluth, and she's asking if anyone knows about a tribe up there that is putting down leg traps for wolves where they hunt. And she just said, it seems really odd to me that this would be happening. You know, I've asked around a little bit, but nobody has any information about it. So I wanted to ask that. And I also wanted to let everyone know that at the Minnesota State Fair, you can go to the Senate booth and the House of Representative booth inside the education building, and they have a survey, and you could actually say and fill out on that survey that you want to end wolf hunting in Minnesota. So I wanted to throw that out there as well.
Yes, and actually that's in the education building. Both the Senate and the House for the legislature have booths there, and they have a survey they give every year. And I'm really impressed that they have that question. And I will say that Howling for Wolves had nothing to do with that. Not that I'm proud of that necessarily, but, and we would just encourage people to do that. Now, somebody told me there was an online version, and I haven't had a chance to look for it. I'm wondering if anybody else has had a chance. Cause that would be great if we could push that online, survey. It would really, really be helpful for people to continue to push their legislators to tell them that they want wolf hunting prohibited. It's going to, My worry is after this publication and in combination with some other news that I got at this meeting August 17th, which included livestock producers are complaining more and conflicts are being confirmed more and wolves are being killed more practically than ever. They have reached the number of wolves they killed as all of last year already, and they have two more months. This in combination with a comment made by the Voyagers Wolf Project director, Tom Gables, the researcher, he stated on WCCO radio that the pack territories are no longer delineated precisely the way they usually are. So I am concerned that we have broken up a lot of packs and there's a lot of chaos and it's creating a lot of problems with livestock conflicts and broken packs that are just getting into trouble. And I'm worried we're in a cycle. Now, to answer your question, I have no idea, Wendy, about those traps. The USDA Wildlife Services usually do the trapping and it's generally for killing. If these are research traps, I suppose they have pads on the traps to try to protect the paws, but the USDA person may know that other people are trapping. He may know about that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I will check that out.
Yeah. And I can give you his contact information. I could just call him. You just tell me where these traps are. I could just call him and find out because he does answer my calls. I was impressed with how much of an impression Howling for Wolves had made on the Wolf Plan panels. And I was able to sit in on the technical group and plead that they evaluate this paper on the human caused mortality. And frankly, the paper that the DNR cooperated in publishing that this paper was in response to, they saw a huge increase in human-caused mortality, too. They just didn't believe their data because of the way they were using some Bayesian modeling, which is too complicated for me even, but it's trying to connect dots in a smooth line, and their dots don't connect in a smooth line because it was like a kind of a steady wolf mortality before the hunts at about 20%, and then November 2012, it jumps up. So it's not a straight line. It's a discontinuity, which was the difference in the two papers. The second paper did a discontinuity analysis and showed exactly with the initiation of the hunts, the bump up in the mortality, and it stayed up. The trend stayed up. So we're very concerned, and we have to push. We have to push to get wolf hunting out because it turns on wolf killing, and it cannot be controlled.
Yeah. Wow. Really good points. Wendy, you have anything else?
Yeah, I just want to thank you, Maureen. And if anybody's out there at the Minnesota State Fair, stop into those booths and fill out that survey. Also, I guess we can just try Googling to see if there is the one online. That would be really helpful for people who can't make it out there in person. And
Take a photo of yourself, send it to Howling for Wolves on Facebook or info@howlingforwolves.com or, you know, just try to help us pump up the action. You know, on Instagram, share it with us. We have Howling Number 4 Wolves on Instagram. Send it to Native Roots Radio. They'll send it to me. So, right. You know, we want to just kind of increase the traffic there.
It sounds great. We always appreciate all of your advocacy for our Minnesota wolves, Maureen.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You guys are great. Keep it up. Miigwech. Well,
yeah. And we, the Pinigigi, because like Ho-Chunk are called the people of the sacred voice, Pinigigi is thank you in Ho-Chunk.
I like that word, Pinigigi. It's really sweet. So I enjoy this. Anyway, I'm going to come out and see you at the fair too.
Right on. You'll see our daughters because Wendy and I are semi-retired and Wendy's really retired. We just go by every once in a while and tell them to get off their phones and then we go do our fair thing.
The fair is grueling if you're running a booth.
Yeah, it is.
It's hard. We did it last year. We were there every single day for 12 days. It is hard. It's fun though also.
Can be energizing, but I found Wendy is a I'm an extrovert and Wendy is an introvert. Yeah. And I really experienced it. I would get you know, excited, or I'd get energy from it, and you would get energy sucked from you. And I saw it from, it was crazy. And I finally believed you after all these years.
Yes. Yes. Howling for Wolves was there for 7 years, and we probably will get back there. But I get energy from, obviously.
Right on. Well, let's make this plan to action. Go to the fair, the education building, and fill out that survey. And then also your call to action, Dr. Maureen.
Well, I just think we all have to keep on the governor. You know, it's mm-hmm. going to come down to the governor and lieutenant governor. If you guys have a chance, ask her. Because, you know, when they're not in office, if we don't get the bill passed,
right.
the DNR will do their new plan, which is really an old plan with new dressing.
Yeah,
seriously. Definitely. It has a few things. It has some good stuff about consultation with tribes. It does. And it has mm-hmm. things about keeping the ecological function of wolves. But it still has weird, crazy reasons for a wolf hunt that are not true.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Hackett, for stopping in, founder of Howling for Wolves. And we appreciate your support, but also all you do for our relatives with tails and hooves and little big noses.
Aww. Oh, guys, did you see that we bought guard dog pups? We got Mary Falk of Love Tree Farms. She sells really delicious organic cheeses at the St. Paul Fair, and she's an organic farmer who has sheep, and we purchased Howling for Wolves, got her some guard dog puppies, livestock guard dog puppies, to help replace some of the adults she lost. And they're really cute, and you can see the pup dates on our Facebook page.
All right.
And hey, Instagram.
All right. Hey, thanks, Dr. Hackett, for stopping in. You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. And up next, Bob Blake from Red Lake, with the Solar Bear with the Solar News. Ho!
Affordable, healthy, and culturally appropriate food is accessible right in the heart of the American Indian Cultural Corridor at Four Sisters Farmers Market. They embrace inclusivity and accessibility at Four Sisters, accepting SNAP and EBT benefits, market bucks, guest produce market bucks, cash, and cards. So enjoy the abundance of fresh food regardless of your payment method at Four Sisters Farmers Market. Open Thursdays until October from 11 to 3 at 1414 East Franklin Avenue. More at NACD.org and tell them Native Roots Radio sent you.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org.
Let's live and let howl.
Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical prescription drugs and dental, plus over 30 extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal.
You work hard for every cent you make. You have bills and you have goals. Choose a bank that's going to support you along the way. That's Fair Financial Banking. No overdraft fees, no minimum balance. No credit score required. Call 651-262-2173 to talk to a Fair Financial enroller to open your account today. Keep more of your money. That's fair. Fairfinancial.org. Fair is a program of Prepare Plus Prosper, a nonprofit organization, and is not a bank. Banking services are provided by Sunrise Banks N.A., member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by J.S. Bean Factory off Randolph Avenue in St. Paul, bringing you only the best coffee roasted to perfection.
Wow, good read. Hey, yes, we're here with Bob Blake from Red Lake, and we're here listening and going in anticipation with the Solar Bear with the Solar News. Welcome, Bob.
Oh, wow.
I got the applause button there. All right. Hey, welcome.
Oh, yeah. You listened to the Howling for Wolves lady. That's awesome.
Yeah. She's been a sponsor for a long time, and we support her work. And, the wolves are so important to us Native Americans. I mean, our lieutenant governor is in the wolf clan. So, you know, that just yes. right there says it all.
My Ingen, is how we say it in the wolf and Ojibwe. And then, of course, Robert, you're my brother, your friend, his Native American name was Chi My Ingen, which means big wolf.
Really?
Yeah. So wow. that was his name. Yeah. And of course wow. us, you know, that was his Native American name. But yeah. So Robert, lots happening. Okay. Yes. And, let's start with what's happening down in Florida with the mm-hmm. hurricane. And there has been 19 states that have activated 25,000 line workers, linemen, you know, that they go up and they fix the power lines. Mm-hmm. And they've been activated to, go and stand by, you know, and they're currently putting back power to, you know, the state of Florida and that whole kind of Gulf region there.
Yeah, crazy. Some deaths and people missing again. It's tragic, and it's like 2 years in a row, Robert, that they had a big hurricane in Florida.
And I think, I think that what we need to start thinking about, right, as we move forward, you know, is like how, you know, how do we start burying the power lines in the ground, you know, because, you know, there's going to be so many of these inclement weather events now, that, you know, it's just going to happen with more severity, with more intensity. And, I just don't know how we start kind of, mitigating, the risk, right, for right. our communities across the country. Another story here, Robert, is that experts say the increasing severity of weather events, including 7 tornadoes that touched down in Michigan last week, shows that the effects of climate change are becoming more noticeable. So, you know, we know this because we've been talking about this for the last couple of years on the show, but the severity of these storms now, before these scientists couldn't actually connect them and say that the severity of these storms are connected straight to climate change. Now they're saying now they are connected to they can say for a scientific fact that they are connected. So,
yeah, I've been hearing that more and more in the media too, finally, and by politicians and directly saying that, and weathermen or weather people.
Well, yeah. And the other one too, Robert, and you know, we know that this has happened though, but the record breaking wildfires that are happening up in Canada due to climate change are contributing to poor air quality. And of course, you know, what just happened out in Hawaii too. So, you know, we're seeing more and more of these, the bottom line is that we're seeing more and more of these, you know, events that are directly caused by climate change, you know, and so we really do need to start taking this very, very seriously, Robert. But I've got some good news here to everyone yes. that is listening. And we are well positioned to see climate pollutions, greenhouse gas emissions, drop by 40% below 2005 levels by 2030 if we implement all of these plans that are currently being put up by the Department of Energy, all of this solar that we could install. We need to be able to have, other governments, other state governments take up a plan of getting to net zero. Robert, more importantly, we need investments like pension funds, state funds, mm-hmm. We need these places to start investing into companies that are going to have good ESG goals, environmental social governance goals, because not only can we get to this level before 2005, if we do this, you know, it really is going to take all of us voting with our money, you know, honestly, when it comes right down to it.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk a lot of politics, but, you know, Biden's releasing money for infrastructure and for solar and for natives to do it. And I know you're working with some tribes, and hopefully you'll be working with one out in Wisconsin very soon here. It's there for the picking, and you just have to have, you know, you have to have the vision.
Yeah. And we do, you know, and like Robert said, you know, Native Son is going for a major grant with all the tribes, you know, to do a solar for all, you know, and you know, it's so important that we start preparing our communities right now for all of this climate change, so we can keep on the power for, you know, our elders, you know, that need the breathing machines. They need to keep their diabetes medication cold, you know, and so forth. So it's really, it is really important. Hey, Robert, I just got a few more statistics that I want to tell you real quick. Yeah. In 2022, wind power accounted for 22% of new electricity capacity. And it was only second to solar. And get this, right? 125,000 Americans now, you know, are working in that wind industry. So that, I think that's just incredible. And in the statistics only get bigger with solar, because obviously you need more people to deploy solar. But, you know, think about all these jobs that are being created. So, you know, this guy, Vivek Ramaswamy, or this, you know, this Republican candidate who's out there, you know, talking bad about renewable energy and, you know, they're not creating jobs. It's a dead end. This guy is a car salesman. I just want everybody to know this. He is a straight car salesman, and he does not know what he's talking about, because the statistics speak for themselves, Robert.
Yeah, definitely. Now, there's a lot of that, too. I've heard from politicians in the past, and I still hear them quote some crazy stuff, but not have any, you know, where they got that was like, I don't know, the bathroom wall or something, because nobody, they're not telling us where they're getting their information, and they say these outlandish things like that.
And I want to let everybody know right now that I'm getting that these statistics that I'm reading to you, the statistic right here that I'm going to read you right now off the Department of Energy statistic website, and wind energy is one of the cheapest energy sources nationwide and generates enough electricity to power more than 43 million homes. It's got the sources to cite it too. So, you know, Solar Bear is not just telling you something that he's picking up from out of the left field here, like, you know, some of these Republican. I'm just watching some of these guys talk, and Robert, they're literally, it's garbage they're throwing out there. So I want everybody to understand that, please make sure that the information that you're getting is correct. I'm listening to these guys because, sorry, Robert, I'm a policy geek. I like to watch the races, yeah. Even if they're Republicans.
Yeah.
But these guys, I've just got the wrong information, and they're spitting it out, and I feel so terrible for people that are listening to them.
Well, you know, it was interesting when we were in school, and when Wendy and I were in school, wasn't the social studies teacher always the coach? So now we're really being affected by that. I'm just kidding, but I'm throwing out there.
Yeah. And you want to know something too, you know, like it really comes back to all of, you know, back in 1982 when, you know, the Reaganomics was like, you know, government is the enemy. Right. And you looked at that government was the enemy. So let's cut all the resources to the schools. And yeah. Now we're starting to pay for it, Robert.
Big time. Hey, Bob, thanks for stopping in. It's been a great show. What a way to end it. Thank you so much. Solar Bear with the Solar News, Robert Blake from Red Lake. And I want to thank Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.